Spirit Blade Underground, episode 500. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. On this 500th episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, I'll share a review of the movie Ready Player One, as well as my thoughts on the first 5 hours of Far Cry 5. Plus, I'll take some time to look back at 11 years of podcasting and 500 episodes of this podcast. Lots to do. Here we go. Ready Player One. Now, I haven't read the book. It's been suggested to me for years that I should, but I never got around to it, and I just thought, okay, they're making a movie. I'll just watch that. The synopsis provided by Warner Brothers reads, in the year 2045, the real world is a harsh place. The only time Wade Watts truly feels alive is when he escapes to the Oasis, an immersive virtual universe where most of humanity spends their days. In the Oasis, you can go anywhere, do anything, be anyone. The only limits are your own imagination. The Oasis was created by the brilliant and eccentric James Halliday, who left his immense fortune and total control of the Oasis to the winner of a three-part contest he designed to find a worthy heir. When Wade conquers the first challenge of the reality-bending treasure hunt, he and his friends, aka the High Five, are hurled into a fantastical universe of discovery and danger to save the Oasis. Alright, so let's talk about the story, the script, the pacing, that kind of thing. This is a pretty action-slash-spectacle-heavy experience with a story that's fairly simple. What engaged me most was actually the world, not really the story, and the potential experiences that could be had in the Oasis, and kind of just seeing what the next pop culture reference was going to be, or what the next solution to the current challenge, you know, was going to be. Although some people are killed in one scene in the first third of the movie, those were kind of like the highest the stakes got. I strangely didn't feel the stakes of this movie. I mean, there's a evil corporation that's trying to win this contest so they can get control of the Oasis. And a lot of people are really into the Oasis, but I don't know. There was something, it didn't feel life or death, you know, if this evil corporation would have gotten control of the Oasis. It just would have felt like, okay, people are hosed and they probably won't be able to afford the Oasis anymore. They'll probably have to start taking off their headsets and engaging in other activities, you know? So there was something about the world that they didn't present enough of to me so that I understood how bad it would really be if this evil corporation gets control of the Oasis, apart from them. You know, the corporation, you could see them like planning, like, once we get control, then we'll put ads all over the place for people and stuff, you know? And I was like, really? Those are the stakes? They're going to get control. They'll charge people more and there'll be more ads and stuff like that. I don't know. As stakes in a sci-fi movie go, that seemed pretty tame to me. Like I said, there was this, you know, I guess since they, well, I don't want to give away too much, but anyway. So yeah, didn't feel the stakes very much. It felt like the plot of an 80s movie where the low-income underdogs are going up against the wealthy corporate fat cats. Now, you might think, well, that's appropriate, Peter, because, you know, there's all these 80s references throughout the movie. Well, yeah, but they're all taking place in connection to the Oasis, because the creator of the Oasis was big into 70s through 90s pop culture, and so that has influenced this whole competition and stuff and the things that everyone else is interested in, but it wouldn't influence, like, how life, you know, carries out and, like, what the... It was kind of like on a meta level that there was this 80s element in the story. And so making the plot of the movie itself an homage to the 80s, if that was intentional, was kind of meta to me in a way that detached me from the drama and from the stakes. Still, I cared about the main character enough to want to see what became of him, what became of his life and his relationships. And despite the large scale spectacle throughout this movie, the stakes that I was interested in were much more personal, revolving around Wade Watts' relationships and his attachment to the real world and his, you know, attachment to life in the Oasis. You know, thankfully, the value of real world relationships was an intended theme, and it does have a nice built-in payoff. I had trouble accepting the logic of the world at times. The police and government in this movie just kind of seemed generally absent without explanation. And the logistics, and, you know, maybe you could say, well, because corporations are, like, ruling the world. Well, but it wasn't as clear to me as I thought it could be, that how much power the corporation had over the running of society, you know. So the fact that the government and police were largely absent was like, this is weird, you know. And also the logistics of how VR controls and VR suits work in this movie seemed inconsistent. You know, some people would have these conveyor belts that would move in omni in any direction, you know, so that you could have the headset on and be running around in the virtual world and not bumping into things. But a ton of people didn't use those, and they would just run around in the real world or jump around on their furniture as you showed them doing things in the virtual world. And in those shots, it would conveniently parallel, you know, their furniture would conveniently parallel a rock that they were standing on in the virtual world. But I'm like, how is it always going to parallel like that? It was convenient in this shot, but how is it really going to work? And they would have people like running around in the streets as they're doing a raid, you know, in the game. And I'm like, why are they not like whacking into parked cars and totally stumbling over themselves as they run into telephone poles or whatever the crap else, you know, is in the real world that's not in the game world? So I just kind of had to shrug my shoulders and accept that. And like I said, that combine that with the 80s kind of like vibe of the plot. And I just kind of had to go, all right, we're just kind of having this nostalgic kind of not really grounded experience. And so, you know, once I adjusted to that, I was like, okay. The 70s through 90s pop culture references are too numerous to name, and I'm not even going to spoil any in this review. I recommend watching the movie and seeing what you can spot for yourself, and then compare notes with friends, because much of the joy of these references for me was how unexpected they were. I was like, oh my gosh, they brought that into this movie, you know. So those moments were really cool to not know about in advance. Okay, some brief words about the cast. I thought the cast was solid, but I would have liked to have seen some kind of no-name actors, which there were actually a handful of those in the supporting cast, and so that was cool. But I would have liked, even in the leads, to have both no-name actors and actors who weren't beautiful or physically fit specifically in the lead roles. I think it would have more effectively brought out the themes of people creating attractive online alternate identities for themselves as a fantasy that they want to live out, you know. There's a character in here who is kind of insecure about how they look in the real world, but when you see them in the real world, I'm like, okay, I mean, I guess I know what they're talking about, but, you know, they still have really nice looking hair and, you know, good complexion, you know, good, like, the healthy looking skin and nice trim body and stuff. And, you know, so anyway, that I think it was a missed opportunity to use something other than the usual trim fit Hollywood body types. Missed opportunity. That said, I'm not surprised about that. I'm just kind of like pie in the sky, wishful thinking right now, I guess. Moving on to stunts and visuals. This is like a CGI fest, but with a virtual world as the premise, that works fine for me. And the trade-off is some wildly creative spectacle, even before inserting the too numerous to count pop culture references. It's a visual feast. In fact, it almost felt like too busy at times. It's like, you know. But it was worth it. You know, it was a really, really unique unique experience. I don't always comment on the score, but I will briefly hear the scores by Alan Silvestri, and it felt appropriately like a John Williams score to me. That's really what it sounded like a lot of the time. But again, I would have preferred that to have that somewhat old-school John Williams melodramatic vibe to be attached only to the virtual world, which is influenced by 80s pop culture, and kind of bring out the vibe of the 80s, you know, when we're in the virtual world, and then have a different style of score when we move out of that into the real world, maybe a more modern or serious kind of sound. All right, so did I pick out any moral, philosophical, spiritual themes that seemed significant or that I thought would spark worthwhile thought or conversation? Much like the Bruce Willis movie Surrogates, Ready Player One is... This is stating it a little too strongly, but I'll say it anyway. It's a cautionary tale about investing too much time in a virtual world or in superficial relationships. But unlike the movie Surrogates, this movie is also a celebration of virtual worlds and entertainment. So the pointedness that would, you know, potentially be cautionary in the message is muted a bit, I think, by the way that entertainment is celebrated and glorified, you know. But I do think there's room for that. I do think there's room for celebrating, you know, entertainment. We shouldn't poo-poo entertainment or even extremely immersive and involving entertainment hobbies. Video games, paper and pencil RPGs can create some amazing experiences that we shouldn't feel guilty about giving some time to and really enjoying, you know, to the best of their potential. And yet, how much time we give to our hobbies is a crucial issue that we need to visit and revisit. You know, we're talking about, I think, two different things when you talk about how much you're enjoying something and how often you're enjoying something. So I think that's something we need to visit and revisit, considering not only the relationships that we currently have, such as family and friends or people that we're dating or that are, you know, our spouses, but also relationships that we might develop if we prioritize keeping time carved out in our schedules to look for and pursue new friendships, new relationships. And as this movie sums it up, you know, it may involve pain, but real life is the only thing that's real. And I really appreciated that note. All right, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time, maybe in a DeLorean, and say, Pater, skip this for now and just buy it. Buy it when it comes out on home video. It's not a mind-blowingly great movie, but it was pretty cool, and you'll want to watch it more than a couple times, I think. It's rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi action, violence, bloody images, some suggestive material, partial nudity, and language. I actually don't remember the partial nudity. That stuff usually sticks out to me. So maybe it was a background character. It depends on what they mean by nudity. I don't remember seeing any butt cracks or female frontal nudity. There was like a naked woman briefly in the movie, but she was covered always by strategic camera obstructions. So there you have that. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com. Well, at long last, I played Far Cry 5 this week. I played it on the PlayStation 4, and I made a trial and error video, which covers me basically playing those first 5 hours. It's kind of cut up highlights. If you've never seen one of my trial and error videos before, you can watch it over at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. For now, I'm going to play basically the audio from the introductory portion of that trial and error review, and then I'll come back and give you a rundown of my experience playing the game, and then after that I'll give some closing summary thoughts that are again from that video on YouTube. So, all right, here are my introductory thoughts. This time I'm taking a look at Far Cry 5. Now, I have really kind of in the last few years become a fan, kind of discovered the Far Cry games for the first time and really grown to enjoy them. I wasn't sure if I would be able to make my way through them at first because I tend to be terrible at games that require
quick thinking, reflexes, and hand-eye coordination. But I was able, at least on, if there were easy difficulties, I think there were, on whatever the lowest difficulty is on these games, was able to make it through Far Cry 2, 3, and 4, with only a few spots that became frustrating. Now, I love the basic gameplay of these games. In fact, they've become among my favorite games of all time, I think, in recent years. I mean, I really, really enjoy this gameplay. What I don't like are some of the constraints on missions that Far Cry games have had in the past that I feel like a lot of reviewers don't comment on, like timed missions. I hate timed missions, or stealth insta-fail missions. If you get spotted, then you fail the whole mission and stuff like that. I would rather the game react to me and just kind of, like, adapt to my choices or my failures or whatever, instead of just having these lame insta-fail conditions. Likewise, in some missions in Far Cry 3 and 4, if you move too far out of the mission zone, quote-unquote, then you would lose the mission. It would, like, fail you out of the mission. And I'm like, no, I've got this great sniper rifle. I want to be able to shoot from outside of the mission zone. Let me just do this the way I want to do it. In recent Ubisoft games, however, I've noticed some more freedom and fewer kind of annoying constraints. Both in Ghost Recon Wildlands and Assassin's Creed Origins, I feel like there were fewer timed missions, and when there were timed missions, they were pretty generous to me. And I just felt more freedom in general to kind of make my way through this game the way I wanted to do it. And so I'm hopeful that that will be the case here, but I'm not sure. I've also heard that this game is fairly difficult, at least on the normal settings, but if there's an easy setting, you better believe I'm going to use that instead. So I'm hopeful. I'm really super curious about the religious themes in this game. Ubisoft kind of has a thing where they like to take some form of Christianity and twist it and usually make it the villain or something like that. That was the case in Ghost Recon Wildlands. It's certainly been the case in the history of much of the Assassin's Creed games. And we see it again, what looks like again like a cult based on some trappings of Christianity here in Far Cry 5. So I've been very curious to see not only the cult itself, but the alternative to the cult, which is represented, in a priest or a preacher character. I want to see what their version of good Christianity is that counters the bad cult version of Christianity. So anyway, lots of things I'm really curious about in this game. Let's get to it. I have been having a lot of fun playing this game. It doesn't seem to be too difficult for me. I am playing it on the easy difficulty, and the trial and error video covered my first 5 hours about. I am now, as I record this, 7 or 8 at least hours into it, probably closer to 9 hours into it, and still enjoying it. There are some story missions that are a little bit restrictive, and I've had one story mission that was timed so far, but it wasn't difficult. I just had to make a beeline from one location to another. I think the only way I could have failed that timed mission is if I would have stopped to fight people, you know. So in that regard, so far I feel like there's a good amount of flexibility. I did run into a mission during my first 5 hours, and this is featured in the video, where I was frustrated because they told you, okay, go here for this mission or whatever, and they don't give you a whole lot of details on what you're going to do there. And then I got there, and then they give me more information, and I realize, oh, it really would have been handy to have a silent weapon with me. But the mission has kind of already started. I would have had to, you know, drive back or fast travel back to change my loadout and then come back, you know, so that was a little bit frustrating. And, you know, all the more frustrating because it was a mission where I had to rescue other people, keep other people from dying, and I hate those kinds of missions. And so you can see me get frustrated and fail at that several times before finally finding success. As a side note, I put timestamps on the trial and error video. So, I mean, normally if you wouldn't watch a video as long as those tend to be, I'm trying to get into the habit now of any video that's basically 20 minutes or longer, I'm adding timestamps to, so you can, when you fire it up on YouTube, look and see kind of like the topics and, you know, thematic breaks and stuff of things that are going on in the video, so you can skip to the parts that most interest you. But anyway, yeah, I have been having fun. Let's see, what else would I want to say? Oh, you know, there's an interesting kind of interplay with, in terms of how they use
religion in the game. In the game, if you're not familiar with the premise, you're being dropped behind enemy lines in a fictional county in Montana where a crazy cult that has some trappings of Christianity has kind of taken over the whole county. You know, they've really grown in their numbers and they've really become forceful. And so it's pretty outlandish. I mean, I think they're trying to go for something that was remotely based in history, because I think there was like a, let's see, well, many years ago, there was, it wasn't a cult situation, but it was some guys, some kind of group, and I think it was in Montana, that, like, didn't want to pay taxes or something, and so I think they were kind of holed up in a bunker or in some kind of structure, and there might have even been a shootout. That's been, I think, more than 10 years since that happened. I think, yeah, I can't remember, but more recently, there was something else, I think, in Montana that that kind of had some, a couple minor things in common with the idea of, like, a backwoods cult or something. But this is, it's weird with the cult itself. I don't see them saying anything that really represents kind of like what I would call the writer's view necessarily. I mean, sometimes you can see, oh, okay, they're tying these ideas to the villains, and it just so happens that those ideas are among the less popular ideas in Christian doctrine. For example, Christian doctrine teaches that, you know, we're broken. And I mean, there's nothing that's more verifiable than this. If you really, you know, look around and just, you know, just spend some time on the internet, you know, we as human beings are broken and dysfunctional, and we just have hate and selfishness in us. And that gets, lashed out on other people, all the time. And all kinds of other little dysfunctions and things. So there's something wrong with us. We need to be cleansed. We need to be fixed from this broken condition that we're in. And that's kind of like one of the central pieces of like what I would call the quote unquote gospel, the central good news or message or whatever that they're preaching, that this cult is preaching, you know. So, but apart from that, most of the stuff that I found interesting thematically was in what I was hearing Pastor Jerome say. There's a pastor in this that is part of the resistance, and he is he's a good guy. He's supposed to be kind of likable, I think. And the way that he talks, you know, you can tell sometimes when you're watching a movie or reading a book or, you know, any kind of fiction you're entering into, you can kind of tell if you're watching for it which character or characters represent the mouthpiece of the writers on moral issues. Like, okay, this is the character that usually says the right thing. I mean, I use this device too. If you listen to the Spirit Blade audio drama trilogy, you can tell sometimes, like say Isaiah in the original Spirit Blade. I think Rand kind of serves this role as the mouthpiece, you know, of like of reason and solid moral thinking, and so you can kind of tell which characters are being used in that way, and that gives you some insight into the worldview of the writer or the writers. And so I think Pastor Jerome is the character who most strongly fits that role that I've seen so far in the game. And he said some interesting things. He quotes the Bible in some interesting ways. In fact, let me actually cut away to some audio right now from my trial and error playthrough. This will go on for a little bit. And it just talks about, and I just react to how Pastor Jerome uses the Bible. Take a listen to this.
There's no limit to how many ways people can be separated and called different. Skin tone, beliefs, education, shape, orientation, status. There's no limit. But look at the resistance. When we cry, our tears are the same. When we laugh, it sounds the same. Our hearts are constructed the same. The followers of Eden's Gate have forgotten that. This isn't my first time in a war zone. I was a pawn in an oil war. I know what it's like to see the lives of innocent people cut short by others who don't value human life. The dust will settle here. We'll have to reckon with the fact that this brand of acceptable mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. If you're looking for a Bible quote for inspiration on how to deal with Eden's Gate, Ezekiel 9:10. So I will not look on them with pity or spare them, but I will bring down on their own heads what they have done.
Yeah, the problem with that is that what he's forgetting
which a lot of Christians miss, even Christian pastors sometimes, is that books of the Bible were written in specific genres with a specific purpose at a specific time for specific people. And so just taking a quote from somewhere in the Bible and then saying, okay, this is my mission in life, is it's totally inappropriate and dangerous. First, you have to understand the context. Then you can try to make some kind of application to your own situation based on any parallels that exist.
God's glory can be seen in the resistance. It's that unity, strength, and love across all races and all faiths that shows us that evil can be overcome if we work together. Eden's Gate wants to separate us. See how they kidnap people? It's because there are more of us than there are of them.
Yeah, so I take it that, like, this guy, he's a good guy, and so the writers want to represent him as, like, a good guy, and he's also a Christian, so my guess is he is intended to be what the writers think a good Christian should be like. And it also says something about the virtues that are prioritized by the writer or writers of this game, because this character is the mouthpiece of what is good and right. So that's why I think it's worthwhile to go to characters like these and see what they're going to say, because it gives some potential insight into the worldview of the writer in a more clear way than you might get that from other things going on in the game. And he's talking about a lot of, like, social issues, you know, this idea of we need to see each other despite our differences as unified. And he almost kind of glosses over, like, you know, no matter what faith we come from, blah, 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 and then, you know, this is what unites us, da, 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 you know. And while unity amidst diversity is a noble virtue, the way that he's emphasizing it here says to me, this is kind of like a pet virtue, probably, of the writers of the game, which isn't surprising to me at all, because at the beginning of all the Assassin's Creed games, they make it really clear. They give you often a black screen with text that says, you know, this game was created by people of multiple beliefs, sexual orientations, ethnicities, that are, you know, all this kind of stuff. So that seems to be like a prioritized virtue at Ubisoft, and I think that's coming through a bit in what the preacher is kind of tending to talk about. Again, that's a good thing to have unity and equality, but I don't think it's representative of Christianity to put that so much at the front to the neglect of a number of other things.
Matthew chapter 24. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many.
That's an interesting quotation. He doesn't give any commentary for it on how he's applying it. I mean, for one thing, in the events of this game, nation is not rising against nation, as it says in Matthew 24:7. So again, context is important, and how he's intending to apply that verse is a little bit of a mystery to me.
Nobody's path is a straight line. We all stumble. If things go wrong, it's just life's way of saying that the time is now to change course. Ask yourself, what can this moment teach me? If I really learn from it, I don't stumble the same way again.
So see, he's speaking, he doesn't read to me like what my experience of Christian pastors is. Now maybe he's changing his language and making it more vague, saying, you know, that's, if something happens, such and such happens in life, that's life's way of da-da-da-da-da, as opposed to saying that may be God trying to get your attention. That may be the Holy Spirit doing something that, you know. So is he possibly making his language more general and vague and non-specific to Christianity because I'm not a Christian? Well, I suppose he could, and I suppose there are some people who might choose to go that route. But I think if you're
job as a pastor and you're representing Christ, then you shouldn't apologize for expressing kind of where you're coming from, what your worldview is, and just telling people, hey, if this is what happens, da-da-da-da-da, it may or may not be God doing something in your life, you know, instead of just being general and saying, maybe life's way might be the universe trying to get your, you know, whatever.
Hatred and violence towards people because of their beliefs, regardless of where it comes from, is a betrayal of what's best inside each and every one of us. Remember, the violence we are taking part in is needed. It's also temporary.
It's interesting. He says that hatred toward those with different beliefs is a betrayal of what? Of what's best inside each of us. But really, the greatest betrayal that we are committing when we hate people who have different beliefs from us is a betrayal against God, who loves them more than anyone in the world loves them, who treasures them and values them, who made them not to be hated but to be loved and honored. We're flying in the face of the honor God intends for each individual person to have. Anyway, interesting kind of interacting with this character and seeing what he has to say. In some ways, the kinds of things that he says surprise me a little bit, because they are kind of is watered down in terms of their doctrinal content, considering that we're talking to a Christian pastor here. On the other hand, there are some denominations that really do water down doctrine, and they de-emphasize the Bible, and I think it's to their detriment. And sometimes those denominations will have more formalized dress, as this one, as this guy does. So in some ways, it may unfortunately be an accurate representation of what, you know, some pastor of some particular denomination might say. I would rather he more authentically represent his own faith as he talks to people. But maybe this character's faith is kind of, you know, watered down and influenced by the culture around him. Or maybe it's just that the writers just plain don't know and understand some of these doctrinal concepts and aren't aware of maybe how a pastor would really talk, you know. I kind of doubt that a Bible-believing Christian was in charge of writing the script for this game, so. And none of this is a knock on the game or, you know, a point against my enjoyment of it, just some interesting things to observe.
You must destroy them totally! No treaty with them! And show them no mercy.
Okay, so Pastor Jerome just there was quoting from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 7. Bit of a rough quote. He left some pretty important contextual information out of there. But he was applying that quote seemingly to kind of justify, or it seemed to go along with his intentions and actions that involved, you know, taking out the cult members and defeating them and stuff like that, you know. The quote from, I'm not sure what translation he was quoting from, sounded a little bit like King James, maybe New King James, I'm not sure, or maybe a paraphrase that the writer came up with. But the actual words from the ESV translation of the Bible, which is pretty direct from the original Hebrew, Deuteronomy chapter 7, he started at about verse 2 maybe, said, when the Lord your God gives them over to you and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. But starting with verse 1 of that is, when the Lord your God brings you into the land that you are entering to take possession of it and clears away many nations before you, which I think was in that quote, I can't remember now. The verse goes on to specify the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations more numerous and mightier than yourselves. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. So just in the fact that he left out in his quotation the specific nations, the specific people groups that were in there, it just displays the lack of sensitivity to context. This was a command, this was instruction, this was revelation from God given to a specific people group regarding specific other specific people groups at a specific time for a specific purpose. It's not something that should be applied to our mentality today. Now, I'm not necessarily bringing into question right now whether or not someone in Pastor Jerome's position would be right to fight against oppressors like this. That's not really the issue at hand. That's a separate discussion and one worth having. But at this moment, this is just another example of this taking passages of the Bible out of context and imprinting on them a meaning or at least an application that was not intended by the original human author or the Holy Spirit, the other author. So, yeah, we can't do that. That's going to lead to all kinds of craziness and dangerous stuff if we treat the Bible that way. There is a bit of a can of worms potentially in there in talking about, you know, was it, because any time there's a reference to God commanding the Israelites to basically drive out and even destroy these other nations, it's like, oh my gosh, what kind of a loving God would do that? That's a can of worms. It's a great topic and it's one worth exploring. This video is not the place for that. I would highly recommend going to reasonablefaith.org and looking at their questions section and just doing a search for Canaanites. I'll put that on the screen so you know the spelling of that. But reasonablefaith.org, go to their questions section and search Canaanites. And Dr. William Lane Craig has done a wonderful job of addressing what is kind of an intense issue to kind of think about. So anyway, moving on. Anyway, there's not a ton more I really want to say about Far Cry 5. In summary, if you enjoyed Far Cry 3 and 4, I think you're going to enjoy this one. It's more Far Cry, you know? And, yeah, I'm just really enjoying the environment. All the things that I loved about Far Cry 3 and 4, and even some elements of Far Cry 2. One thing that I didn't even notice during my playthrough that was pointed out in a review that I watched after, you know, posting my review, someone in a review pointed out that there's no mini-map on the screen. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's right, there is no mini-map. And it's cool because, you know, you might think, oh my gosh, that puts me at a disadvantage. Well, they find ways of kind of making you aware of enemies and stuff. But at the same time, you are, I think, probably going to be more likely to be taking in your surroundings, paying attention to the things you're seeing, the things you're hearing, and being more attached, immersed, for lack of a non-buzzword, in the environment because you're trying to be aware of what's going on around you, you know? And that's something that I really liked about Far Cry 2. I mean, it was taken a little too far at sometimes because, you know, playing Far Cry 2, I felt like, as you might have seen in one of my streams highlights when I was playing Far Cry 2, like I have to sometimes be really quiet and really focused because I have to have absolute awareness of the sights and sounds around me because the bad guys don't show up on mini-maps, you know. They give you a little bit of like highlight aids to help you see the bad guys, you know, but you do initially just need to be paying attention to your surroundings in order to spot them. So in that way, I would say it's maybe a little more, again, immersive than Far Cry 4. So, but anyway, more Far Cry. I have been looking forward to more Far Cry, and I got more Far Cry, and so I'm very, very happy. So now here are my closing thoughts from that trial and error video.
You should be totally dead! I showed you a lot! Oh, my land.
That was intense. All right, I feel like I've played enough of this game to get a sense of it. I've played about 5 hours of it now. Before I forget, I have to say I am not a fan of them locking the user-made player maps behind the PlayStation Plus wall. That was not the case with Far Cry 4. I'm bummed because I don't have PlayStation Plus. I have no reason to have PlayStation Plus because I don't play any games online. And this doesn't involve playing games online. It just involves downloading maps that other people have made from online. Anyway, I'm enjoying the main game. It's scratching all those Far Cry itches that I had scratched, especially in 3 and 4. You know, it's more Far Cry, and that's great. It also has a few negative points, too. They still have insta-fail missions. I haven't gotten a sense of whether or not I'm going to be limited to, you know, as far as like, I have to be a certain distance away from a mission while I'm actively trying to take it on. I mean, there are probably some annoyances in how missions are structured that I will not be able to discover until much, much deeper into the game. But at least the fact that I'm not seeing them yet may indicate that they're not going to be, you know, any more frequent than they were in previous Far Cry games. I'm interested to learn more about the cult and just kind of like the religious themes that they play with in the game. So far, it doesn't seem like they're making any, like, bold or outlandish statements. It has the same, what seems to be a little bit of a bias against Christianity, or at least an interest in twisting or villainizing certain aspects of Christianity that are unpopular. And that's been going on in Ubisoft games for a long time, so that's not like a big shock or anything like that, or anything that I'm just all upset about. That's just Ubisoft kind of doing what has become their thing. And yet I think it's still valuable to kind of be aware of what they're doing and how it differs from actual Christian teaching, and how their characters, like Pastor Jerome, are using the Bible in ways that are not helpful and sometimes harmful, that people in the real world can tend to do as well. All that said, it's more Far Cry. I've been so much looking forward to this game, and I'm so glad that I'm enjoying it as much as I thought that I probably would. I am ready to be done recording this so I can stop thinking about making content for YouTube and just focus on getting my work done for the day so I can play more Far Cry.
Data collection complete. Activating MusaNet 1.0.
Starting today. Actually, it's already begun before I even sat down to record this. But from now until April 16th, I'm going off-grid. That means that I won't be checking emails or doing any kind of social interaction online. I'll still be in my office working this coming week, getting caught up on some storyteller work, I hope. And there will also be a podcast and YouTube content next week as normal. But the week after, while there will be some YouTube content, there will not be a podcast. I will be out of town celebrating my 40th birthday, 4 nights away in a hotel with a stack of video games and my lovely bride. Woohoo! So I'm really looking forward to that. And just a heads up that beginning now until April 16th, as I just said a moment ago, I will not be on social media or checking email. Any digital orders that are placed at spiritblade.com, including, you know, digital products or gift codes, those will, gift codes won't be processed automatically, but digital, like MP3 product orders, those will be processed automatically as usual. You know, that you get the download link as soon as you complete your transaction, but physical product orders and gift code orders will not be processed until April 16th. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. This week at ChristianGeekCentral.com, Legend, the Retro Rewind podcast number 144, including a bonus theology discussion. If you've never checked out the Retro Rewind podcast before, they're part of the Christian Geek Central Network, and they do some really great stuff over there. I've been on the show. This is my third time now, because I was first in their discussion talking about Predator, and then I was on their show again talking about Last Action Hero. So, boy, two Schwarzenegger movies. And this time, I joined Francisco Ruiz and Paul Powers as a guest for this episode and shared my thoughts about both the theatrical release, which was the main subject, and the director's cut for the movie Legend, starring Tom Cruise and Mia Sara and Tim Curry. And the director's cut is based on the very different European theatrical version of the movie. What we were all kind of like rating and talking about primarily was the U.S. theatrical release. But I brought into the discussion my familiarity with the European/director's cut, which I really think is a better experience for my tastes. And so it was a really fun conversation. It was cool to kind of get there were different perspectives represented among the three of us. And I had a ton of fun with these guys, and I think you'll enjoy checking that out. You can find it posted at ChristianGeekCentral.com or over at RetroRewindPodcast.com. At YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week, I've posted the video Fighting Our True Enemies Part 1, which is a continuation of our look through the book of Ephesians. And so part two will be coming, I'm not sure if it'll be next week or no, it won't be next week. We're going to take a break because I'm going to be talking about revisiting the topic of nudity and entertainment. But anyway, yeah, Fighting Our True Enemies Part 1 and in our look of Ephesians. And I've also posted Far Cry 5 or Bad Bible Quoting, the trial and error review for Far Cry 5. And by the time you hear this, you should all also be able to find my Ready Player One uncut review over at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. While you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, those are good ways to help grow our community and the viewership on that channel. On the Christian Geek Central Facebook and Twitter pages this week, we've got some more Zobmondo, which is kind of a would-you-rather type of conversation game or whatever. Brief recap on the rules. You must choose one or the other. Comments that choose some form of neither are invalid. Second rule is you can't doctor up the situation to make it easier for yourself. There's no drowning that bowl of crickets in ketchup before eating them. No resolving to have that ugly growth removed. No having paramedics or anti-venom ready on standby. You have to live with your choice as it is written. You are, however, encouraged to explain why your choice would be less difficult for you than the alternative. The choice this time is, would you rather have your thumb and first finger glued together for life in the okay sign, or be forced to say thank you before every sentence? I really agonized over this decision and actually waffled. After coming to an initial decision, I had to change my mind. So anyway, and we got some other great responses too so far. You can leave your two cents on Facebook and Twitter, or follow the links from there to our forums and join the conversation. And lastly, as a reminder... Not lastly, actually, I've got more stuff to say after this. As a reminder, next week the podcast is rebranding to the Christian Geek Central Podcast. It's going to be using the same feed, so you shouldn't have to change anything if you're subscribed. You should still be getting it in the same place in your podcatcher or whatever that you've normally been getting it. It'll just have new graphics and a new... series title, and you know, a few little trappings and things like that. Maybe the description will change a little bit. The content of the show is going to be the same. The format's going to be the same. It's going to be the same show. We just want to rebrand it so that there's a little bit more consistency in the, you know, with the Christian Geek Central community and with the YouTube channel and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, don't be surprised when you look for episode 501 of the Spirit Blood Underground podcast and instead find episode 501 of the Christian Geek Central podcast. Let's see here. March was a very busy month, which insiders are learning about. I hit a milestone in production for the Storyteller First Samuel series. I scrapped and reimagined some plans for board game content on YouTube. I navigated the frustrations of working from home with two young boys on their spring break. I dodged some trouble from the government and saw God once again at work through his orchestration of events outside of my control. A lot of different things going on in the month. I share those stories with Spirit Blade Insiders in this month's collection of journal entries, which, as an experiment this month, come in two sets. The first is the usual audio journal entries, but halfway through the month, I switched to recording video journal entries instead as a sort of experiment. Based on feedback, I may switch to video journal entries for Spirit Blade Insiders going forward. If you are not currently a Spirit Blade Insider, but the prospect of having access to video journal entries of mine would possibly entice you, please let me know and I'll take that into consideration. For more information about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider, visit our About page at spiritblade.com. Let's see, is that it? Okay, that's it. Now we can move on. Every now and then people ask me what's on my mind, so I thought I'd take a minute to answer that question. Now, pay attention, please, because I don't think I can do this more than once. All right, this part is my parietal lobe, and if I dig back in here, I can pull out some of my occipital. And I don't know what this part is, but whenever I touch it, I smell peanut butter. Well, right now, I'm going to just kick back a minute and think back to what it's been like to produce 500 episodes of this podcast. Holy crap. If you average 30 minutes for each episode, that's 250 hours of content. And at some point, the episodes actually got significantly longer than 30 minutes on average. So it may be closer to, like, I don't know, 300 hours or more. That's nuts. I can't believe I still have things to talk about. I never intended to make a podcast. I'd been interviewed on a few to promote the Spirit Blade audio drama back in like 2006 and the first half of 2007, but my focus was on producing audio drama. But when an interviewer told me off mic that I should host my own podcast and that I would be good at it and could use it to promote my audio dramas, then At that point, I really started thinking about it. And at first, that's largely all it was. It was a podcast in my mind that provided updates on my audio production work, reviewed movies, and had a weekly Bible study. And it was usually 30 minutes or less. And I only worked on it outside of my normal work hours so it wouldn't slow down audio drama production. But it wasn't long before I started to appreciate the potential ministry that was possible through the podcast. And over the years, it gradually moved from being a means of pointing people to my audio dramas to a means of directly ministering to people. Slowly, a small community began to develop, which eventually led to forums, and then later Christian Geek Central. And my weekly podcast segments became the basis for the Christian Geek Central YouTube channel content that that I put up there from week to week. So while I initially set out to be really just an audio drama producer with maybe, you know, some forums or some kind of online, you know, interaction, the podcast really ended up becoming a central point from which other forms of ministry branched out. About a year ago, I did a special 10-year anniversary episode of this podcast where I played the very first episode I ever recorded and interrupted that with commentary now and then. It was really interesting in that process to see, all the things that have changed over the years on this show or improved in the quality of the show over the years, or just how I have changed in how I sound on the mic. Both in terms of my personality and my vibe that I give off or whatever. My voice has changed a little bit. I went through kind of like the second puberty that can happen in your 30s, which for men, which is really, most men don't notice it, but I mean, it's if you're a singer and you kind of know how the voice works and how it ages and stuff, then you're aware of these things maybe more than some other folks. But my voice maybe just got a little bit deeper, a little bit heavier in my during my 30s. And but of all the things that have changed over the years, I think the In Search of Truth segment has undergone the most change. You might argue that the reviews have changed more. That's a close second. I'll get to that in a little bit. In those early episodes during the In Search of Truth segment, which is the Bible study segment, if you haven't listened to this show before, I would cover an entire chapter of a book of the Bible each week. We started in the Gospel of John, picking up where I'd left off after already having started a written version of that study, kind of on a weekly basis, on the Spirit Blade Underground weblog. Anybody remember that? It still exists, but it's got a notice up there that says the contents of this site have moved or whatever, you know, with a link to Christian Geek Central. But these days, I often spend an entire 10 to 20 minute segment covering just a few verses. My jaw just drops as I look back at so many things I just skimmed over, or didn't even comment on in the passages we looked at in the early days of the ISOT segment, as some people know that I refer to it as ISOT, In Search of Truth. So I often, when I'm typing, will just write ISOT for short. But a handful of years ago, I briefly entertained the idea of recycling some old ISOT content to give me a little break. But when I saw the old material and listened to it or read it, I just couldn't imagine using it again and feeling good about it. There was just way too much I would want to add. It would just become, if I were to go back and take us through the Gospel of John again, it would be so different. It would be so different. I also used to put a coffee house question at the end of each study segment. Remember those, anybody? And that was with the intent of presenting a question listeners could kind of chew on for a little bit and hopefully have some fruitful thoughts as a result. Eventually that went away. I don't think it transitioned immediately to this. I think it just kind of went away for a little while. But eventually that kind of slot was filled by the application section that I call, "So What's in All This for Geeks?" So what I try to do, usually I don't always do this, but what I try to do is have a general exegesis section where I'm just making observations about the text or clarifying what the text is intending to communicate, and maybe making just a little bit of application there, but then the bulk of the application I save for this section that in my notes is titled "So What's in All This for Geeks?" Excuse me. I felt like this was an important place to go, because while other Christian geek podcasters and resources were popping up to join me in the world of media that's aimed at Christian geeks, the others that I saw kind of popping up largely seemed to stay in the realm of evaluating themes in entertainment, or just kind of creating community for Christian geeks that wasn't necessarily going into a lot of spiritual development and spiritual maturing that would be in particular relevant to geeks. I think that what other sites are doing is definitely valuable. That's the kind of thing that I have done for years and still continue to do. Also, it can be, if we're just focusing on, say, like, for example, the themes of something, that can pretty easily turn into just kind of like this cold academic talk about something that is removed really from personal investment. You know, it can just be like, oh, well, this is interesting, and this belief that expressed here comes from this school of thought, and da 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 da. You know, but doesn't really make any statements or application, you know, to our lives. And so, I wanted to promote change in hearts, which truth and the Holy Spirit together make possible. And in just a few years of doing this ministry, I had begun to identify recurring personality traits among geeks, both strengths and weaknesses, and I wanted to speak to those and provide jumping-off points for geeks to experience the kind of life, joy, and purpose that God wants us to have. And that's been really good for me, too, since I'm a geek and I need to hear and remember a lot of the same things that I think will be useful for you guys. I have personally grown and developed as a student of the Bible, both in the intellectual knowledge sense and in the experiential sense of just like, all right, let's apply this to my life. Let's take a leap here. Trust the Bible, is legit and really does know what it's talking about and what it says about life and all these kinds of things that I, you know, am faced with. You know, let me just apply this and see if the Bible quote unquote works. You know, and so I've had to, 10 years more now of doing that, and I owe a ton to my study mentor. His name is Dave Lindstrom, who has been meeting with me to study the Bible or books on theology, and now we're going through a book on hermeneutics for over 10 years now. I just realized and shared with him, a few days ago. I was like, Dave, I can't believe it. We've been doing this for now just over 10 years. Wow, it's been such a huge blessing to me. Dave has been an elder at our church since it first launched in the mid-90s. And an elder, that means he's a part of a leadership board that really even oversees the senior pastor. He has a Master's of Divinity and is fluent in Greek and Hebrew. He's about 15 to 20 years older than me and has been a model of humility and integrity for me. So if you have ever experienced any benefit from the In Search of Truth segment on this podcast, please do me a favor, pause this podcast for just a minute and thank Yahweh, our God, for a man named Dave Lindstrom and ask for him to be blessed and rewarded for his investment in me. If I were making a list of things that have changed over the years on this podcast, a very close number two would be my reviews. For one, they used to be written, which remained the case all the way up until shortly after the YouTube channel launched. That was so that they could be published as both blog and podcast content, and there were things I liked about that. I could gather my thoughts a little more carefully, and it took less energy to record for the podcast when I knew pretty much exactly what I wanted to say. But with YouTube, I wanted to get away from visibly reading my reviews, which I haven't entirely gotten away from. I still make sometimes extensive notes, and so you can catch my eyes certainly reading during those reviews now and then. But I wanted to get away from it as much as I could, so I changed to more of an outline format that I used when recording more off-the-cuff thoughts for my uncut reviews in video format. And with the time needed to fix the audio, export, and upload a video file. Did I say export? I think it's export. But with the extra time I needed to, just do technical video stuff to get it up on YouTube every week, I needed to cut time somewhere in my schedule. So I decided I could ditch the pre-written format in favor of the
uncut gimmick, which has been received pretty well since I started doing that. I also eliminated number scores from my reviews. I think maybe somewhere on the Christian Geek Center website you can still find a description of our scoring system that I don't use anymore, but some people, when they contribute their reviews, they'll still use it. I might take it off at some point, I don't know. I have it on my to-do list for the whole website to get a big update, but I haven't had time to really think about that yet. But anyway, I also, I eliminated number scores from my reviews, largely because I didn't want to have to justify why a movie I said more good things about ended up getting a lower number score than another movie I reviewed that I, you know, said more good things about. I said that wrong. I didn't want to, let's say, okay, I didn't want this scenario where, like, one movie gets an 8, you know, but I spend, you know, most of the time saying good things about it. And another movie gets a 9, and I spend more time saying some of the negative things about it, you know, compared to the other video. So I didn't want people to be like, hey, you gave this one an 8 and this one a 9, but you said this and da-da-da-da, and it's just like, okay, let's just not even do the number thing. I hate numbers to begin with, and I didn't want to bring math into my review process or you know, into my justification of my reviews and stuff. And so it's just weird. It's weird to me to think about, you know, numbers representing, because I've also been trying to increasingly remove objective language from the way I express myself in reviews. In other words, I still tell you exactly how I feel, but instead of saying, for example, his acting was terrible, I'll try to say his performance didn't feel real to me. And instead of saying this composer is a hack, I'll aim for the score felt to me like a retread of themes I've heard a million times before. And this is for a few reasons that I've tried to make this change. Number one, the people who make movies, surprise, they're real people with real feelings. And creative types are often their own worst critic, being haunted by even slightly negative comments and quickly forgetting exuberant praise for their work. That's definitely true of me. I've heard a number of other creative types express the same feelings. So I'm aiming to speak the truth of my reaction to their work, but in a way that is less likely to hurt them unnecessarily. And you can be surprised sometimes at, you know, that these people that you think are in this just big Hollywood world, or, you know, they're off in their movie-making world and, you know, they're not aware that you exist or whatever. But you know what? Since committing to that shift in my review style, I've had 2 filmmakers now of movies I've negatively reviewed reach out to me and express their appreciation for my fairness. One of whom, Dallas Jenkins, gave me the opportunity to even interview him. And you can find that interview over at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. So I think in that regard, it's been good, both for the to avoid unnecessary discouragement of people in the creative field, and also to potentially create bridges and connections, you know, that might lead to deeper conversations and interactions about the stuff that's going on out there in entertainment. The second reason that I have kind of tried to avoid using objective language in my reviews is that I think objective review language creates relational barriers. This has just been my experience again and again and again and again. I've had people tell me they don't even want to bring up certain movies or franchises around one of my other friends because of how cutting and insulting that person becomes towards something other people enjoy. Now, we all supposedly understand that reviews are just opinions. That finds its way into us expressing our opinions all the time. Well, it's just my opinion. No, it's just my opinion or whatever. And yet, think about this. When we hear someone trash something we like, it can come across as insulting to our intelligence or to our personal standards of quality. Even as subjective as I try to keep my language, one or two people have expressed weariness at my expressions of dislike toward most of the Marvel movies. So in that particular case, I've even tried to take a different route as well to avoid repeating myself too much while still clearly stating my real feelings. In my work, as I think it should be in our relationships, there are far more worthwhile topics to be divided over. And while opinions on entertainment shouldn't divide us, we gotta live in the world that we actually live in, not the world that we think should exist, you know? So that means that opinions on entertainment still often do divide us. Even when someone is very polite over expressing their dislike of, say, Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, when they do it enough times around me, there's like a little switch that gets flipped, and I just kind of don't feel like texting them to see if they want to hang out, or talking with them on a forum if they're an online acquaintance. You know, it's not out of anger. I'm not shutting them out of my life or anything. It's just like, you know, as I'm casually thinking about, you know, who I want to talk to or whatever, I just like, no, I don't really feel like talking to them right now. You know, it's just a little thing, but it makes a difference in our connection with people. I just don't feel as much like hanging out with people who don't enjoy the same things I do. And I think most people develop friendships based on common interests. So for the sake of more important things in people's lives that I want to have a voice in, I at least try to make overt the subjective nature of reviews that we all supposedly already understand to be subjective anyway. And then the third reason that I've changed my language in reviews is I'm not interested in adding fuel to the fires of bitterness on the internet. I think it's a bit unhealthy to be united with others based on your hatred for something. Now, it's fine to express dislike for something with others who you discover have, you know, the same opinion of dislike towards something as you, but to seek it out or to thrive on it strikes me as unhealthy. I think there's still room for it, like, a gimmick, you know, with commentators like Angry Joe, who is playing a sort of character of himself on YouTube while his audience seems to understand that he is playing up his anger for entertainment value. But there can still be misunderstanding there. And so while other people do it and, you know, and I'm not going to say, oh, they shouldn't be doing that, it's not worth it for me personally to tread those waters, given the purpose of my ministry, where it's really important for me to feel approachable to other people, to feel like people can relate to me and can reach out to me. All right, well, hey, speaking of gimmicks, like playing up anger for entertainment, here's a gimmick I tried for a little while.
Hello?
I can't hear him.
Hello?
As much as I did enjoy my phoned-in review gimmick, I don't imagine you'll hear that again on this podcast. For those who don't know, before doing YouTube, if I ever saw a movie that I felt had great potential but seemingly lacked some effort and fell flat as a result, I would record my review by leaving myself a voicemail on my old flip phone without writing it out first. Kind of a tit-for-tat gimmick where I put no effort into my review since I saw what I thought was a lack of effort in the movie I watched. I still like the idea, you know, as this kind of thematic gimmick, but it's, honestly, it's presumptuous on my part to assume what the effort involved in making a movie was. On top of that, the audio and video recording on the newer phones is much nicer, and so it takes away from kind of the original gimmick of sounding like it was phoned in, you know. And especially since none of my reviews are scripted now anyway, there's just multiple reasons why that gimmick, you know, has been discontinued. I also made a bumper for a rage ranting segment. I don't know if any of you remember this, that I think I used just once and never since, with this heartbeat sound effect that would slowly build as I became more passionate in expressing irritation about something until...
Now you've done it. Now you've done it. There are not many things in this world that make me angry, but that just makes me want to rip somebody's head off.
And basically, for the same reasons that I try to avoid objective language in reviews, I dropped the idea of rage ranting as a gimmick for expressing my opinions. Again, I liked the bumper. It was a fun gimmick, but it just ultimately worked against my purpose for this podcast and my ministry. I still really enjoy doing reviews, though, and believe me when I say that they are not compromised in their expression of my opinions as a result of my efforts to adjust the language. I hope to have many more years of telling you what I like and what I don't in both movies and video games and anything else geeky that I have time for. Okay, that hard, sticky thing you pulled off, that's part of the skull, right? And this pinkish white stuff is the brain?
Yes. Might I suggest an alternative?
No, listen to me. We can't turn back now. I've got to know what they're thinking.
Have you considered talking to them?
All right, sew that back on. We'll give it a try. I used to go after interviews a lot more than I do these days. And largely, it was Christian geek genre authors. I'm still glad I did those interviews, but I have to be honest that I was rarely invested in them personally. I don't really read Christian sci-fi and Christian fantasy, but I want to, as a service, represent those options to you guys. It was more of a service to those of you who would be interested in getting to know some Christian geek fiction authors. But the time and effort it took to schedule and record those interviews didn't often feel worth it to me. Incidentally, that's one of the main reasons I don't have a co-host on this podcast and just fly solo most of the time. Since I have to spin so many plates, I had to choose a format that I could do every week during the hours that worked for me and my family. So, but anyway, back to the subject of interviews. These days, I'd rather just highlight a few Christian geek authors now and then on the Christian Geek Radar segment that I do on the YouTube channel and this podcast. I went after the Tosca Lee interview and the Brent Weeks interview, and those were great to get for the show. The Dallas Jenkins interview, he directed The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, that was offered to me by him, the director himself, which I mentioned earlier, and that was crazy cool, but it wasn't something that I really sought out. But it's still a lot of work and inconvenient scheduling to make those happen, so I'm just not motivated to seek out interviews. Don't write them off, though. Now and then, I've still pursued some interviews here and there, so there may be more in the future. Every once in a while, I'll put a feeler out to someone, and, maybe they'll never get back to me, or maybe sometime they'll get a nibble. There's actually one person that I'm in the middle of getting in touch with right now that I think would make a really cool interview, it's kind of slow going back and forth, so I don't know if they're, if they're going to follow through. They expressed some interest, but I don't know if they're actually going to follow through, so we'll see. The difference, I think, will be with any interviews that I do in the future is they're just going to be much more likely to be interview subjects that I'm personally very interested in, whereas with other stuff that I think might be of interest to you guys but isn't necessarily of an interview subject for me that would be really interesting, I'll just, highlight them on the Christian Geek Radar or something.
It is time to be happy. It is time for a contest. Fabulous prizes. A winner is you.
For a while there, around the same time I did more author interviews, I would run contests, usually to give away said author's books. This is another thing that falls into the category of more work than it's worth to me. I don't know if it's a thing anymore, but it used to be said that you could boost your listener count using contests and giveaways. I didn't really notice that to be the case, but then getting an accurate count of podcast listens is near impossible for me because of the various ways the file can be downloaded or listened to. Honestly, guys, I haven't been trying out any marketing gimmicks or even keeping track of listener numbers for years. It's too much work for results that can't be measured accurately. So, in general, both with the podcast and everything else I do, I just try to make the content as solid as I can and really have to rely on you guys to spread the word and tell your friends and family or someone else that you think would connect with this content. I figure if the content is good, then word will spread organically and also that the listeners I get, I'm much more likely to keep. Let's see, what else?
Rejoice, ye penny-pinching nerds! Rejoice! For this is a season unbound by our bank accounts, unfettered by fees! A legendary age of liberty! This is the summer of free!
Okay, this was actually, the Summer of Free was just supposed to be a one-time thing, guys. It was going to be this is the Summer of Free. There wasn't going to be another Summer of Free. That's why it was called the Summer of Free. But John Wilkerson, who calls into the podcast now and then, and actually now does the social media stuff for Spirit Blade Productions, emailed and asked me to do it again when the next summer was approaching. So now it's a thing and has been for I don't know how many years. It takes a good chunk of work, especially since my coverage of E3 and board game conventions have become more involved in recent years. So all three of those things are going on in the summer, it definitely takes a lot of work, but I do get a kick out of it, and I love finding some gems to share with you guys and to enjoy myself, and I think it's also been good as I've started doing I think, a couple times at the start of the event, just highlighting financial responsibility, and financial stewardship is really the word I was looking for there. Because I think that that there's just a lot that we geeks can learn about how to handle our finances that can allow us to have some stability, even when, you know, we look at our financial situation and say, oh my gosh, I don't make very much money, you know. That's not what I've gained from it. My wife is a pharmacist, and so we've always been pretty stable financially because of that. But I have seen how this has affected other people, and I've seen how, when I say this, I mean financial stewardship. Like, we went through a Crown Ministry study, which is a curriculum that takes you through applying biblical principles of finances to your life. Like, what does God have to say about money? The Bible talks about money a ton, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. It is so indicative of where our hearts are at, you know, the way we use our money. And so it's such a heart issue. And there are principles. I mean, the Bible's not telling you how to make a spreadsheet and do your math and stuff like that. It's not telling you that, but there are principles that can lead you to, like, oh, okay, well, this is how I should be viewing money, and issues of contentment and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's really been good, really been good. And so that's something that I think the Summer of Free can potentially be valuable for. Is, yeah, it's mostly this goofy fun thing, you know, finding free whatever entertainment and stuff, you know, but I get this little moment, you know, where I can, where I have the ear of the audience to just say a brief word about financial stewardship. And that's really a lot of what, you know, my work with Christian Geek Central is. It's about, like, you know, let's have fun. And, you know, I want to draw people in who really don't want to listen to or watch content that's all about this really intense, you know, Bible-oriented stuff or whatever. So I draw people in with the fun, but, like, peppered throughout that, you know, I just can take these little moments and just hopefully put some little seeds of information out there that at some point will grow in your mind and be something that can be useful to you. Why is my phone going off? Good gravy. Oh, that's a reminder to, I got to do some laundry stuff. All right, let's move this along. Let's see here. Oh, finally, I am so grateful for the people I've met over the years because of the podcast, both online and the precious few that I've met in person. I have really, really counted it like a huge event to meet any of you in person. There's, like, at least a handful of you now that over the last 10 years I've had some random opportunity to meet because I was in the right part of the country, or you were in the right part of the country or something, and we were able to meet for coffee or at McDonald's, or in the case of Winston Crutchfield, go on a random drive around the city or something. I can't remember where we went. That was a lot of fun, though. So anyway, that's been so cool. That's been so cool. And I felt so supported by all of you guys, whether I've met you in person or not. All of you that have kind of expressed encouragement to me, that really means a lot. As I mentioned earlier, the negative comments echo and linger and haunt me, while the encouragement fades and is quickly forgotten. That's just part of my dysfunction. But if I did an honest count and kept track, I know the encouragement numerically outweighs the criticism by far. And that has been so valuable to me, guys, both emotionally and in terms of my continued focus on the things that you guys let me know really matter to you on this show. My wife, Holly, is just a little aside. And there's a point to this. My wife, Holly, feels very loved when she finds out I've been thinking of her while we've been apart. If she comes home to a special note, or if I send her an appreciative text, she feels very loved by that. And that isn't typically my quote-unquote love language, as it were, but I was blown away and felt so loved by those of you who produced and uploaded the bootleg episode of this podcast while I was busy doing the Extra Life Marathon last November. I can't remember how I discovered it. I was in the back-end tools of the CGC site getting ready to, like, embed the live stream or something, and I saw this post for the bootleg episode of the SBU podcast, prepped for publishing by one of the contributors that has access to posting privileges, and I almost teared up and had a grin just frozen on my face for a long time Most of the time I'm a control freak who hates surprises, but this was a really good one. So thank you to everyone who played a part in that. I also remember years ago on the forums when I was going off grid, and I don't know which one of you it was. It might have been Winston or Chad Barbary or Drew Rubb. I can't remember. I think it was one of you three guys. I'm not sure. But was when I said I'm going off grid or whatever, you know, and somebody said like, okay, now that he's gone, you know, let's start talking about how great Marvel is or whatever. And I came back and saw that, and I just felt loved and known, you know. And so I really appreciate those little things, you guys. Sitting down to record this podcast has become something unique and special for me. Not just because I've been doing it for a long time, you know, and say something like YouTube is more recent. The difference there is like YouTube, any random person might stumble upon a video that I've made. But if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you want this kind of content. You didn't find it through a random search, fairly likely, unless this is the first episode you're listening to. So I feel a little more like I'm talking to kind of my people, as it were. And on top of that, those of you I've met online through the forums or who have emailed me before, you are in my mind as I'm recording. Your name is in my mind. As I'm choosing content, as I'm picking out and thinking about themes and entertainment, I've learned some of your stories, some of your passions and your pain. And so your names, your avatars, and if I've seen a photo, your faces come to mind all the time. I am literally writing and recording content with you in my mind, hoping to be useful to you based on what little I know of what's going on in your life. And I also keep a rotating list of around 5 to 6 names at a time on a sticky note that's attached to my PC monitor. And I'm praying for you guys as I learn about your needs and struggles. I care about you guys, and I make this show for you. If you're listening and you haven't sent me an email before or introduced yourself on the forums, I want to add you to the people that I think about and pray for from week to week. So please introduce yourself to me. Shoot me an email anytime at paeter@spiritblade.com or introduce yourself on the forums at christiangeekcentral.com. Also, a huge thank you to every one of you who has listened to this show. Whether this is the first episode you've heard or you've listened to like the entire archive, I'm so grateful. Really, that you would give me your time. I know that, like, when people are listening to podcasts, it's usually during your time doing something else, but it's a finite time while you're driving to and from work or while you're exercising or whatever, you know, and so that's limited time, and you can fill that with somebody else talking in your ears, and so I really am grateful that you would give me that time with you. Just a guy on the internet hoping to share something worthwhile as he himself struggles to figure out life and faith for himself. And thank you also to any of you who have told someone else about this podcast. I hope it has been and continues to be a useful tool for you, both in your life and in the lives of those that you recommend it to. All right, so there you have it. 500 episodes. Okay, I'm redoing some math here. We had an episode 0, right? So does that make this the 501st episode of the show that I've produced? And then there's episodes 94 through 99 of the missing episodes, which are there to account for the episodes I produced that were made up of portions of the original Spirit Blade audio drama. You guys remember when I aired those? I took them off. They're not. You won't be able to find them now, but I don't know. Do those count as episodes or not? And yeah. Crap, I might have screwed this up. And yeah, while we're at it, how do we count this this bootleg episode? Crap!
Incoming transmission.
Hey, Peter, it's Drew, and I just want to say congratulations on hitting episode 500 of the podcast. I honestly cannot remember how long I've been listening to this podcast, but it has definitely been for several years, and I look forward to it each week, especially the In Search of Truth segment. Always a highlight of my week. So again, just want to say congratulations. Look forward to hopefully another 500 episodes of the Christian Geek Central podcast.
Thank you so much for that, Drew. It always means a lot, guys, when someone takes the time to record me a message or send me an email. And I really value the encouragement, too. Once again, as a reminder, guys, I would love to get your feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, let me just briefly pray for us with something that's kind of been on my mind lately. God, I pray that you would give those experiencing pain and suffering relief. We know that sometimes there are things that you want to say through times of pain and suffering. Sometimes you're allowing those things so that we will be stretched or disciplined, or so that you can get our attention about something. We know it's not your desire for us to be in pain and suffering, but you do allow those things with a purpose. But God, sometimes, as you know, we just can't hear you because the pain is too loud in our lives. And so we pray in those cases that you would give us reprieve from the pain and suffering so that we can clearly hear your voice. Amen. All right, guys. Well, if you would like some help finding a good church in your area, I want to help you if I can. Just recently, someone took me up on this offer. I have really enjoyed helping them try to find a good, solid, just down-to-earth, Bible-oriented, and yet grounded in reality church. And which, actually, I said, and yet. Why are you going off again, phone? Stop! But I said, and yet, as if Bible, the sentence structure was... let me do that again. If you would like some help finding a good church in your area... No. No, the two, I think, actually go together really well. The more Bible-oriented you are, the more practical and down-to-earth and applicable to daily life the Bible is. Unless you treat it like a mystic tome or something that is good for quoting out of context and sounds pretty and profound but doesn't have any use in your life. But anyway, I really do enjoy the process because I think there are not... In my experience searching for churches, both years ago when Holly and I were looking for a church, when we realized, oh, I'm not a worship pastor anymore, this is the first time in forever that we've even had the option of considering going somewhere else, and so we took the chance to look around and ended up staying at our church. And as I've, you know, one or two times over the years tried to help someone else long distance find a good church in their area, I've just been struck how there are... it's definitely in the minority of the churches that I think do a good job of, you know, being in touch with just kind of like reality and the average person, but at the same time not like just chasing trends and hipness or whatever, but like being real and authentic, which is going to make them more down to earth and relatable, but at the same time having the utmost concern of like let's orient our lives around this revelation that God has given us to equip us for life and getting through this broken mess that we have to navigate through every day. So I really enjoy the challenge of helping someone find a church that can do that in their area. It doesn't mean I can help you find a church that will not disappoint you, or that will not have people in it that will let you down once again. Churches are filled with people that need the church, and so we're all kind of broken. But there are definitely some churches that I think are healthier than others. So I would love the opportunity to help you find the healthiest church in your area with the right priorities that I possibly can. So getting back to my script here, if you would like some help finding a good church in your area, then I do want to help you if I can. Online resources and communities are a good supplement, but by nature they can't speak to your particular situation like relationships in a local church can. I was just reminded of that this week, that, you know, when I'm creating content here on this podcast, or, you know, even if you take like brilliant minds who have podcasts or online content, they are still making content that is for this broad consumption. And so, you know, if you're listening to, you know, some kind of resource online that's intending to help and equip you to live more increasingly for Christ, as I want to do on this podcast. But, you know, you feel like saying, yeah, that, I hear you, Pater, or William Lane Craig, or Ravi Zacharias, or whoever the heck is that you're listening to, you know, but what about this thing that's going on in my life, you know? I mean, that's when you need someone that, like, knows you and sees you on at least a weekly basis and talks with you at least on a weekly basis and gets to know you and can love you, and who you can see compassion in their eyes and you can hear it in their tone. There's so much that we cannot share, especially since primarily our online communication is text-based. But even when you go to video conversations, it's still not the same. You can't invite someone into your home or give them hospitality and invite them over for a meal or meet them at a coffee shop. Or, you can't text someone and say, hey, can we meet? And there's just something about being in person. And so there's so many times when, I'll get questions from people, and, you know, I try to answer them as best I can, but like in the back of my mind, and sometimes I'll even bring this up with them. I'll say, tell me about the church in your life. Where's the church in this? You know, 'cause sometimes I'll get asked questions. I'm like, oh man, I want someone to come alongside them and love them and hurt with them and wrestle through this difficult question and this difficult time with them and help meet their practical needs and stuff, you know. So that's where the church can really make that happen. And a lot of churches, there are some churches that do it better than others. I'll just say that. You know, I think probably just about any church is better than no church. At least, just if at the very least they share the common value of, hey, we want to love on people. You know, and hey, that's better than nothing. You know, but there are also churches that do a number of things better than others, and that can provide help more effectively than others, and so or teaching that's more relevant. And you know, anyway, so all that to say. There's just a lot that you're missing out on if you don't have a Bible-oriented church that you're involved in. The context for almost everything in the New Testament assumes that we are serving and building purposeful relationships in a local church. So whether you're in a church that just kind of lacks Bible-based intentionality and is just kind of playing church from week to week, just kind of like this religious country club type thing going on or whatever, or social club or whatever, so whether you're in a church that's like that and just kind of lacks Bible-based intentionality, or whether maybe you're not attending any church at all, in either case, if I can help you get connected to an authentic Bible-oriented church, I want to do that. You can email me at paeter@spiritblade.com, and we can try to look at some websites of churches in your area together. As a reminder, I am off-grid now until April 16th, but if you want to send me an email about that, and then I will look forward to getting back to it and picking up that conversation with you when I get back. Okay, guys, that's it for this show. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Have a great Easter celebration, or a Resurrection Sunday if you prefer. If your faith does not feel real to you, and the Bible seems to amount largely just to nice, impractical ideas, I want to invite you to consider studying the historical evidence for the resurrection. The study of apologetics, you know, a defense of Christian apologetics, which is a defense of the Christian faith. I've done that over the years, not primarily so that I could, I don't know, debate people. I do not like debates. That is totally not my thing. primarily, I've engaged in reading apologetic resources because of how it bolsters my faith. Because of how it helps me to realize and remember, oh my gosh, this is all legit. This is real. The truths expressed in these historical documents that have been gathered together and labeled the Bible, this is all real, you know? And so if you want an experience where your faith can potentially kind of come to life and the realization of its reality can strike you in a new way, I want to invite you to study the historical evidence for the resurrection. ReasonableFaith.org is a great starting point. And maybe that could be something cool that you, that could be a great experience for you that would mark this Easter as a special Easter for you by spending a little bit of time going over to reasonablefaith.org and just do a search on the resurrection, and a bunch of content will show up there. The more I realize how real that event was, the more I feel able to justifiably trust what Jesus and his apostles taught. The resurrection was real. It proves that Jesus is who he said he is, and that he knows what he's talking about. His incredible promises for us are real. His way of life is worth pursuing. It's all real, guys. It's all real. So I hope that's encouraging to you this week. And again, I hope you'll consider checking out a resource like reasonablefaith.org if you would like your faith and its reality to be more present and on your mind. Next week, if God allows it, I will bring you episode 501 of the Christian Geek Central podcast, which will include reviews of the movie A Quiet Place. Oh my gosh, I've been looking forward to that. A review of Altered Carbon. Plus, I plan to revisit the topic of nudity in entertainment and approach the subject from an angle you may not have considered before. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade Insider. You can get more information from our About page at spiritblade.com. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Christian Geek Central podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Oh boy, this one. This one easily made my top 10 list. This is one of the most famous episodes of all Star Trek, based on another famous episode of Star Trek. When this came out, it was Star Trek's 30th anniversary. There were two Star Trek shows on at the time, and they both did something to celebrate the original series. Voyager did a weak one, where they went back to Star Trek VI, and it was, whatever. And
but
then there's this.
Trials and Tribulations.
Trials and Tribulations.
Oh, this goes back to the classic original series episode, Trouble with Tribbles.
And it did it with gusto and quality. I mean, you could tell, these were people who loved the original Star Trek.
Yes.
And this is the advantage of a show like Star Trek or Doctor Who, something that has decades and decades of pedigree behind it, is you can do these flashbacks to the older times and all the nostalgia that comes with it. And it's not the same as like when a show flashes back to a few seasons ago or something like that. It's like it's flashing to a generation before.
Well, and they're doing the Forrest Gump thing where they're putting our characters into actual scenes.
Yeah, they're putting them in the original
footage.
As well as recreating the sets. And it's just, it is so perfectly done that if you didn't know which things were the original shots and which ones were the new stuff recreating, you would not be able to tell. If you didn't just know from, I know that actress from the original Star Trek, that guy was never in it.
There's a bar fight sequence where Matt knows the original episode better than I do, so I only know that it's new stuff when I'm seeing a DS9 character on the screen.
And they're having DS9 characters fighting with the original series characters. They've stapled them in. It's like, it's a great use of computer graphics.
They've got a lineup where it's a whole bunch of original series characters, and then Bashir and O'Brien have just been digitally inserted in there.
And they're actually interacting with Kirk and everything.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's also just well done. It's well written because I mean, no, granted, how they get back in time is kind of a cheap thing, but that's not the point, so it's okay. It's okay that it's kind of
profit magic.
It's a cheap profit magic Deus Ex Machina that gets them back there, and that's how they get back. But the story is not about how they got back, it's about what they do. And it's a fun adventure, it never takes itself seriously. Every character gets at least a little bit of a great moment. They get some fun. Odo's probably the one who has the least to do.
Worf is pretty funny.
Yeah, Worf gets the hint at the whole smooth-headed Klingon thing, and they cop out of it. They say, oh, we don't talk about the outsiders, but they still hinted at the things that Enterprise will eventually use to explain it.
Well, and they do the whole thing about how Tribbles hate Klingons, Klingons hate Tribbles.
Yeah.
And apparently Klingons systematically exterminated them because they were an ecological menace.
And the thing is, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, but of course Odo ribs him for it. He's like, oh, you guys blasted a bunch of tiny furry things.
The glory of the great triple hunt.
Do they still sing songs of it? How you guys exterminated a bunch of tiny, helpless, furry creatures.
They're basically, yeah, they're like kittens, but without a head or legs or tail. They're just a ball of fur that purrs and eats and makes babies.
It's basically like a somewhere between a fist and a head-sized furry trilling ball. It doesn't even seem to have a face.
Well, to be fair, I guess Kira doesn't get much of a moment either, because Kira, both being pregnant and from an alien race that they know haven't been discovered yet, kind of has to stay behind. Although they let Odo on board, so I'm not sure why Kira didn't get involved. It's not like they don't have pregnant women in the 23rd century. But, you know, Dax really gets to have a lot of fun because she, in another life, was alive in that time. So she gets to be the one full of nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so she's, you know, she's, oh, I remember this time, I love this. And, you know, there's a lot of fish out of water jokes about how things have changed. And
The Dax symbiote.
Oh, yeah. She hooked up with McCoy, too, in another life.
Yeah. I swear, there, who in the galaxy has the Dax symbiote not slept with?
There's some I could be my own grandfather humor.
Yeah, there's a Philip J. Fry joke.
Worse than Philip J. Fry, because Philip J. Fry thought it wasn't true when he became his own grandfather. That's Futurama if you don't already know the character.
There's Chief O'Brien fumbling around with the old school.
He's afraid to touch Scotty's jerry rigging and all that. And
yep.
It's great fun. And if you know the original series, there's loads of references.
It's a great little comedy episode.
If you don't know the original series, you'll probably still enjoy it because it's still just great fun, and it lets you see just what the charm is of that original show, where everything is so outdated, including the acting, I might add.
Yeah.
Because in the acting, there's a lot of over the top theatrics and.
Yeah. It's still the theatrical school of acting.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to emote for grandma in the back row.
Exactly.
It's not TV acting has not evolved to be what it is now.
Yeah, because the TV was still at a pretty early age in the mid 60s when they started. So everyone who was an actor was trained to be much more grandiose.
Yeah, they were trained.
You see that in the
stage.
50s and 60s stuff. But yeah, it's a great episode. It's one of the best. It's one of the best Star Trek episodes in general because it really is a good reminder of what's great about Star Trek, the fun.
Well, it takes a good old episode and builds on it to make an even better new episode.
While still being in the same vein, too.
And it's good comedy, it's good homage,
mm-hmm.
It's good Trek nostalgia. I mean, it's absolutely no bearing on the overarching plot of DS9, but a delightful stop on the way.
It's just a little cul-de-sac we did to have fun, and then on we go. But and I think of when Voyager, at the same time they were doing that, Voyager did one where they had an adventure where they went back to Star Trek VI in Tuvok's mind, and it wasn't a bad episode. It was actually one of the more decent Voyager episodes of that period, but it was still just so weak compared to this one. And you can really see, like, everything is on the screen. I mean, the good special effects, the good writing, everyone's acting their best, you know. And I can't help but notice how one Tribble at the end, the most important Tribble in this story, looked a lot like Donald Trump's hair. And so that's about all there is to it, because otherwise all we do is relist all the jokes and ruin it for you. But definitely check out Trials and Tribulations. Next time, we hit one of Star Trek's all-time lows. My personal vote for second worst episode.
Hold on to the joy that you received here. You're going to need it next.
You want to talk about getting the bends. We're going from this episode to... Let he who is without sin.
Please, let he who is without sin kill us before we have to watch it.
Look, cast those stones.